Was it about 1951 that Yerba Buena band broke up?
No, actually, the original band, as it was at the Dawn Club, started to break up around 1949, I believe, or late 48. Scobie was unhappy about the pay, and we had been drawing very good crowds, but it went to, most of the money went either in the bartender's pocket or the manager's pocket, or went someplace. Much of it, of course, had to be used to pay off the tremendous amount of money that was loaned and borrowed to open the club in the first place. So there was never, to this day, a real accounting of how much was taken in or how much was operating expenses or so this made everybody pretty unhappy, and it was very minimum wage, and most of the band, the guys in the band, were unhappy about it because it was not a corporation at that time. Lou at that time was pretty much a bind with his hernia operation, and it was very painful for him to play, and he finally reached a point of when he had to go in and have the operation, and so this left with just one trumpet, which was Scobie, and Scobie figured that the place was going under since the band wasn't as it was originally presented, and amongst other things, of course, he felt that the repertoire should be expanded to include some other things that other people didn't feel like they were in the traditional vein enough, and Turk was unhappy. He wanted to start his own group after this. And so I believe it was Scobie left first, and then Turk left, and that left the band stand pretty empty. Mm-hmm. And without that, without Lou there, and Scobie and Turk, it was hardly the Yerba Buena band anymore. So
This was a long time ago, and I suppose the rancor is long gone, and of course Turk and Lou are both gone now, but it seems like there were some principled musical differences at the time.
Well, I suppose that everybody who plays in a band has their own personal choice of a repertoire that they would like to do, but in the Yerba Buena band, which started as a cooperative band, everybody had pretty much of a choice, and was in a vote as far as what the repertoire would be in the beginning. So I guess it was felt later on that this choice was being taken away and more dominated by Lou, and that wasn't a very unhappy situation. I guess that was one of the contributing factors in the split. And
well, so, go ahead.
So this left the band to stand, as I say, pretty vacant, and somehow struggled along for a while, but there are many factors involved in the closing of Hambones, but the basic one, I think, was the fact that it wasn't intact as a Dawn Club Yerba Buena band.
Bob Helm talking about the formation and the ultimate demise of Lou Waters' Yerba Buena Jazz Band, which was active from 1939 until about 1949. In that set, we heard 78 RPM transfers, courtesy of Dick Wahlberg, of Sage Hen's Strut, Chattanooga Stomp, from the Yerba Buena Jazz Band, recorded on the West Coast label in early 1946. And the Alcoholic Blues, Lou playing a trumpet with a tumbler, a glass tumbler, as a mute. Bob Helm, of course, clarinet, and the trombone was not Turk Murphy on those, but Don Noakes on those particular Yerba Buena Jazz Band sessions. Dave Radar with you for Jazz Rhythm, the best in classic jazz, old and new. In future weeks, Bob Helm and some more recent projects like the Down Home Jazz Band, the recent stomp-off release Dawn Club Joys. In an exclusive performance a couple of years ago at the Santa Rosa Dixie Jazz Fest with Jacques Gauthier and his Creole Rice Jazz Band, and with another group of New Orleans musicians, a lot of them who overlap with Gauthier's Yerba Buena Jazz Band, Chris Tile's New Orleans Rover Boys. That's coming up in 2 weeks. Dave Radler with you for Jazz Rhythm, the best in classic jazz, old and new, brought to you every Sunday evening from 8 to 10 on 91.7 Information Radio, KALW San Francisco. Still ahead, Bob with his 1954 Riverside Roustabouts, an album that he wrote all original tunes for. In the next set, we'll be hearing Bob talk about his years with Turk Murphy. They even roomed together for a few years. And we'll be hearing from the rare Columbia 10-inch LP, also reissued on 12-inch, Barrel House Jazz with Turk on trombone, Bob on clarinet, Don Kinch on trumpet, Wally Rose piano, Dick Lammy banjo, and Bob Short tuba. This is the same album described on its liner notes as defining Barrel House Jazz as, quote, rough and tumble, sleeves rolled up, knock 'em down, hard slugging, two-fisted jazz by a bunch of guys who know the score and love to play. Next, I asked Bob about Turk Murphy's early years. In 1952, Turk had a band, his own band, for a couple of years at this point.
Yes, I think he had his own band after he left Hambone Kelly's in 1949, I think, 48 or 49. And he was touring. He spent much time in Vegas and the Los Angeles area and on the road. And I think a complete description of dates and places is in Jim Goggins' book.
Just for the record?
The interview was just for the record with Turk. I don't have the dates on all of it here, but Turk was between jobs at that time. I had joined him in the summer of 51 at the Greenwich Village down in Palo Alto. He followed Scobie's band in there. And that place went belly up and then went on the road for the agency again and promised a job in the Blue Note in Chicago. At the end of the Zanzibar job in Aurora, Colorado, there was no job. Everybody was sitting around waiting. Don't call us, we'll call you. And the phone call finally rang, and there's nothing for you, boys. I'm sorry. So that was the end of another Turk Murphy band, and everybody split for Portland and L.A. areas and the Bay Area. And you mentioned Turk's band. Well, he didn't have a band at the end of that, but Charles Campbell persuaded him to put a band together for a jazz club meeting, which was held at the Italian Village in January 6, 1952. So that was the start of Turk's second band or third band.
So, and you and Turk worked, I guess, very comfortably together because you spent, over 20 years with him?
Oh, we traveled together in the Merle Haggard band and various small bands and then room together in Oakland for a while. So we managed to eke out a living and have a little time to play once in a while and formed a couple of bands. We didn't get any dates, and at that time there weren't too many available dates for that kind of band playing that kind of music, as I told you before. It was still not very popular.
You and Turk worked together closely in that band for many, many years, with some of the most creative work coming near the beginning.
The best explanation for that would be probably they were familiar with part playing and each other's playing, and so we could sort of psych each other that way, as many musicians do when they play together for a long period of time. They're able to anticipate what the other person's line might be, added to a cohesive performance by musicians as they play together. If they give them enough time together, they'll either hate each other or else they love each other. I'm both, probably, alternately.
I think it's through the efforts of people like yourself that there are a lot more people now who know and appreciate that there were older forms of jazz.
If it's popular at all, it's due to the jazz clubs and the all too few programs like your program and Elwood's program and Dick Hadlock's and programs similar throughout the country. And I don't think many of the major networks would touch any of it, and certainly the media is not aware of it. Very seldom do I ever read anything about any really traditional jazz happenings, and unless they're advertised. As far as writing about it, seems to be a taboo.
Well, it seems like Turk was also an exceptionally thorough musician.
Yes, he was a school musician, and he didn't choose to be to follow the symphony route, but he, like Lou Waters, was also a good background in band music, and most everybody in the band had a background in concert, marching band music. Anyway, most everybody cut their teeth on that background, and that was invaluable as a help as far as part playing and knowing what the different instruments in the band follow the line. And I suppose you might say that was the basis of the King Oliver bands and the other New Orleans bands, which took their cue from certainly marching bands and concert bands also. And the opera, of course, in New Orleans. It was the first symphony band, the symphony orchestra in the United States was in New Orleans. It was an integrated symphony, which is interesting.
Bob, you have a very high assessment of this period in the Turk Murphy band.
I believe that the Italian Village date, which went on until we went to New York in 1954, was the start of a lot of music with this Turk's Future band. So I think it was a very important period. The Turk was writing a lot of originals, and Wally was playing some obscure rags, and we were putting quite a few other tunes. Of course, we only had a quintet. You know, it was usually clarinet or trombone lead, and the short switch from tuba to trumpet. And so while it was a very small band, at least everybody got comfortable with the new music, and from then on they could be expanded into a larger band for recording purposes. And the records that we made for Good Time Jazz at that time, I think, helped a lot. So they got a lot of airplay. And later on in 1954, when Columbia and Charles Paramount invited us to New York, there was a lot of airtime around New York at that time, too. And they also appeared on the Ed Sullivan Show later on. It was 1959, I guess, but there were several talk shows in New York and record playing that many of the stations in the East Coast picked up on. And the recording session, which I think was Dancing Jazz at that time, received good reviews, and it was getting a lot of airplay around the country. And I think Rudy Blesch's earlier show on This Is Jazz, which was a standing network program, did very much to spread the word of jazz, too. And that would be 1946, but there was much interest shown in reviving and bringing some of the early pioneers from New Orleans to demonstrate the music in San Francisco here. I think several, the Kid Ory's band was revived, I believe, and Buck Johnson, of course, and many of the earlier musicians had a chance to play some music that they hadn't had a chance to play in years. And that all helped to get the listeners used to an earlier form of music.
Well, from that period of Turk Murphy's band in the very early 50s, we've got some selections from Barrel House Jazz, which is well recorded by Avakian, I believe.
Yes, that was done, I believe, while we were at the Italian Village before we went to New York in 54.
Speaking of innovations, there's an innovation of yours on here, something you called Clarinet Foo Young.
Well, it was a tune that everybody admired, and especially the Hot Fives playing of it, and Louis' composition and his performance. And
Louis' cornet chop suey.
Just I wanted to play it, and we didn't have a trumpet at that time. I sort of adapted it, and I played it more as a clarinet feature instead of trumpet. But my apologies to Louis, of course.
Thank you.
These recordings also demonstrate that you had a very strong, brash, pungent tone of your own in those years.
Well, it was sort of required, Dave, of the particular instrumentation that we had. Instead of using more of the classical clarinet embouchure and tone, it wouldn't work very well with what we had in mind. We needed more of a brassy sounding clarinet, and so I've been criticized for playing that way, but I played with two embouchures, but I found the other one doesn't fit in the jazz band with a trumpet, trombone, or two trumpets in front line as well, at least it was my thought that it didn't fit as well, so I sort of abandoned that way of playing. So I've been criticized by intonation. And
well, I was going to say, besides tone, you had an unusual choice of notes or way of playing the notes.
Well, maybe that's what was on top of my head, that my interpretation of the clarinet line. In a line, depending on how many horns there are, the clarinet usually has to shift around to play a different part than if there's one trumpet, you would play a different part. I would play a different part than I would play with two trumpets. And with one trumpet, I would play more of a duet form than I would with the two trumpets. I'd play more of a free line above the two trumpets.
Mm-hmm. And the intonation is just your own choice, just something you felt
well,
like?
Well, it's something that I thought would fit better with the group that I was playing with. And I have changed my embouchure playing with different groups, but I haven't done that recently.
That's part of our interview with Bob Helm. And as you can hear, I was unsuccessful at cornering Bob on the topic of his unique intonation and style. He does have a very unusual sounding horn. And I guess the truth is in the music, and that's what speaks most eloquently. Dave Radler with you for Jazz Rhythm, the best in classic jazz, old and new. This is a pre-taped interview with Bob Helm, who's been playing reeds since 1925, spent 25 or 30 years with Turk Murphy and helped found the Yerba Buena Jazz Band, which created a new style in jazz, the San Francisco Revival style, and helped bring back the black and New Orleans-style music that had very much fallen out of fashion in the 1930s and 40s, but which was revived with great vigor in the 1950s by individuals like Bob. In that last set, we heard three selections from the rare Barrel House Jazz. I believe that was 1954. Two that were specialties of Bob on clarinet with the rhythm section, The Pearls and Clarinet Fooyung, after Louis' Cornet Chop Suey. And in the middle, we heard Mississippi Rag. In this next set, we turn to the recordings made with the Riverside Roustabouts, and still ahead, Bob with Turk at Easy Street. Incidentally, next week, we'll be featuring a concert classic, a new release by Royal Society Jazz Orchestra, and then some of the hottest swing recordings made by the Casa Loma Orchestra. Next, we're going to hear Bob Helm's Riverside Roustabouts. This is extremely rare. This particular issue is from the English London 10-inch LP. Riverside Jazz apparently had a good working agreement in the early 50s with English Decca. We have Ev Ferre trumpet on some numbers, no trombone in the band, Bob Helm, of course, clarinet, and a rhythm section really borrowed. These are mostly New York musicians borrowed from the Red Onion Jazz Band. These were musicians who played with Bob Hodes. Hank Ross, piano, Bill Stanley, bass, Bob Thompson, washboard. Obviously, Hank Ross didn't play piano with Hodes. Some of these other guys did, Bill Stanley and Bob Thompson. All compositions on this album were by Bob Helm, and you'll hear him talking about collaborating on some of the lyrics with the poet, San Francisco beat poet Weldon Keyes. These recordings have some similarities to the easygoing skiffle bands of the Southside Chicago bands like Jimmy Blythe and Jimmy Bertrand in the late 30s, many of whom featured Johnny Dodds on clarinet. We'll start this set with Doin' the Plymouth Rock from Bob Helm's Riverside Roustabouts, circa 1954. Thank you. Also in the early 50s, you took a break to produce an album, The Riverside Roustabouts.
Well, I didn't exactly take a break, Dave. We were doing both at the same time, and I was counting on the guys in Turk's band to join me in this one. But Turk was under contract to George Ivakian, and Ivakian sort of frowned on the idea of guys jumping from one band to another. And so I was able to recruit some guys from the Red Onion band, friends, and they fitted in just fine, and they assimilated all the new music. It surprised me because we were working full-time at doing an album for Columbia, and this one wound up about 8 o'clock in the morning, I guess. And Everett Ferrey came over from Turk's band to do it. But
yeah, I see Ev Ferrey is on the personnel, Hank Ross, piano, Bill Stanley, bass and tuba. So this was recorded in New York in October 1954. And it's all original tunes.
Yes, it's an old album of original tunes. Everett's chops were getting pretty beat on the last tune, and which entitled I Don't Want Any More. Well, it's an interesting sidelight on that. I was writing tunes collaborating with Weldon Keyes, a well-known poet who established in the Bay Area at that time. And we were kicking tunes back and forth, and he would send me a set of lyrics, and I would write a tune, or I'd send him a tune, and he'd write a set of lyrics for it. And several of these tunes out of that album are tunes that had lyrics. That last one is one that did have. It was about an alcoholic kicking the drinking problem.
Thank you.
Bob Helm on clarinet there, obviously before he switched to soprano sometime in the 1950s. From the 1954 rare, now long out of print, and in this case, London Decca pressing of his Riverside Roustabouts, we heard Doin' the Plymouth Rock and I Don't Want Any More,